Check.
Stupid. Hello and welcome to the Rancor's Brothel, issue number 41. I'm your co-host Matt,
and I'm your co-host Cody.
And our special guest today is Cody's friend,
Craig.
Craig.
Hello.
He said it real fast. Sorry. Craig, good to know you, sir. How do you know Mr. Cody?
We went to college together for a bit and then just kind of nerded out for years after that.
Fair enough. When did you guys graduate college? I know I'm a little older than you.
2010.
That's adorable.
I'm actually still simultaneously working on 2 degrees.
Oh, well, sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right.
God, in 2010, I was married, homeowner, and was impregnating my wife. So,
like, through all of 2010?
Well, I mean, that's rehearsed before the big show.
It's a lot of rehearsing.
No, you want to hear a funny story?
Always.
Let's start the show out right. Here's how I conceived my son.
Oh, God.
No, we're talking about nerdy things. My wife and I took a weekend trip to Chicago to the last stop for the traveling Smithsonian exhibit of the Muppets was at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. And so we went up there for a weekend, stayed in a real nice hotel, went to the Muppets exhibit that day. We went and got massages. And then we went back to the hotel, and there was a hotel bar, and she said, you want to go have a drink? And I said, sure, because I'm a drinker, right? And Natalie is not. So her inviting me to a bar should have already been suspicion one. Suspicion two is when she kept buying me glass boots full of Smittix, my favorite beer.
Oh, God.
I never had to refill my glass. She kept getting up and refilling them for me. It's like, okay, this is not my wife. Who are you? So then we go back to the hotel room. Some things occur. And then the inevitable question of, do I pull out or not, was answered with, don't. So it turns out my wife had been following her calendar and knew she was fertile that weekend. And she got me drunk and essentially date raped me into having our son.
Wow.
So my son was conceived through a love of the Muppets and Smittix. And so his first birthday theme was the Muppet Show. So...
one day when he goes back on the internet and Googles his father, he will find the show and he will never love the Muppets again.
I know. I did the math once and there's like already over 200 hours of me podcasting for him to listen to. Like,
Joe,
just in case I die while he's young, he'll be like, he's always going to have these records of his father.
I apologize for you now, Joe. I'm so, so sorry.
So yeah, that's how you make a baby in Chicago.
And that's the show. Thanks for joining us today, everybody.
Tits. No, we're going to talk about our main topic today will be Jurassic Park, the love that we all carry for it, and what's happening in its future. And in the meantime, we'll do our other segments. So I guess we can go ahead and get started with what are you reading, Cody?
All right. Well, since I like keeping the book count, I got about 8 books this week.
Nice. Jesus Christ.
Pretty low for me. That's actually really low. I did read them all before the podcast, so honorable mentions this week go to Wonder Woman, which is fantastic. I recommend people pick up the trades because Brian Azzarello, if no one's ever read him, he's dirty, he's grungy, and he's just been like, everything that's wrong with Wonder Woman, screw it, I'm rewriting it. It's all Greek mythology, and she's in the Pantheon, and the whole woman born a woman thing, yeah, that's bullshit. She's not made of clay anymore. Yeah, she's like, that's just a lie your mother told you. You're actually because he raped your mother, which makes so much sense if you know Greek mythology.
Okay.
So shout out to that. That's a good series. Conan the Barbarian by Brian Wood has been fantastic. It just ended. It was all about, if you know your Robert E. Howard, it's all the Song of Beli he did. So Conan riding around the seas with this very attractive foreign woman, and they're just like raping and pillaging villages. They just wrapped that up with the 25th issue, so I encourage people to get trades if that sounds interesting. But what I really want to focus
on... I'm always interested in a woman raping.
Oh, yeah. Lots of raping.
I don't know how that works, but you said the woman was pillaging and raping as well.
No, Beli or Belit or however the hell you pronounce her name, she is just... She's a beast. She's a tyrant. She is the pirate queen. It was a great series. I'm sad to see it go, but, you know, You can only derive so much from a 10-page story of Robert E. Howard's. But finally, do either of you read any Valiant titles?
No.
No.
All right. So in my ever consistent effort to promote things that a lot of people don't read so that it doesn't die, Valiant Comics, okay, look for it. They have about 7 or 8 titles. Both of you, look for Quantum and Woody. Quantum and Woody is on its 8th issue. It was old comics from the 90s. You might titles like Exo, Man of War, Harbinger, Shadow Man. I'm trying to think what else. Those are kind of the big three. Quantum and Woody was kind of this side project. It only had like 15 or 20 issues in its original run. But comedic comic book that it kind of plays with race and politics and gender, sex, violence, and it just kind of screws with those classic comic book stereotypes. So you have a black man who, you know, his father when he was younger adopted this white son. So these guys are technically brothers, but they hate each other. The black guy goes on to become like super Republican military guy. This other guy's a total like freeloader douchebag off the side of the road. They end up having magical powers because their dad works in science and he creates these weird bracelets that they have to clang together every 24 hours or they dissolve into atoms. And they run around doing hilarious things that you would find ridiculous. I mean, superhero-esque things, I guess I should say. Like if one of us tried to be a superhero right now just because we could shoot lasers out of our eyes, you realize how horrible that would be, right? That's yeah. This comic. There is a scene, I believe, on page 4 of the first issue where you see it's a skyline and you see these these two little dots. There's like a smash of glass and these two little dots fall in and it continues all the way down the page and you hear him go, "Holy shit, get out of the way, everybody." It's got the that internet meme. I can't remember it anyway. But it's a funny book and I recommend everybody read it. Monologue over.
Fair enough. That's a hard monologue to follow because you were cutting in and out. So I apologize to our listeners. I'm sorry I didn't interrupt you to tell you. No, for me, I went and picked up my comics today. It is February 22nd, my half birthday. So, yay, I'm getting older. Mm. All they had for me today was Batman 28 and or maybe it was 29. No, 28. And Walking Dead 121. Apparently, the Ultimate Comics, which have been coming out weekly, slowed down. So they did not have a release because it's been 2 weeks since I picked up comics. So
death knell.
Like I said before, man, the storyline—they're clearly on their way out. So, but I did meet a nice family at the comic shop that were picking up the Ultimate past issues 3 and 4 in this run. They had gotten issues 1 and 2 yesterday at Comics University, but today they were like, "Oh, I didn't know 3 and 4 was out." Like, yeah, they've been out for weeks, dude. But they're going to be at the Ash Comic Show tomorrow that you and I are attending.
Yes, which will be in the past.
It will be in the past once this episode drops. We have put everything out there on Facebook for people to attend with us. I think we're going to have a good following, which is awesome. But yeah, we're going to go to the Ash Comic Show as a Rancor's day out. So. And then we're all going to lunch.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Craig, will you wake up and go to the Ash Show with us?
That will possibly happen.
Cool. Well, we encourage you to go. It's on the west side this year, or this time, so this quarter.
Yes.
That depends on how intoxicated I find myself tonight.
Well, measure slowly, sir.
You know, if you get drunk enough, you just sleep on my and I wake you up at 9 o'clock when I go to the show.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true.
Place opens at 9:30. It's where we're all going to meet there.
It's going to be great.
It'll be exciting because I don't follow comics in the current level. I hate doing issue by issue. I really only read in full graphic novels or trade paperbacks, and comic shows are the cheapest way to pick those up.
That's funny because that's the way I am generally. I have the 4 titles that I read weekly now that I have on my pull, but everything else is trade paperbacks for me, especially because I live by the library. So I just order them there. Then I don't even have to buy them. Because I'm a cheapskate motherfucker.
It happens.
It does. When you have children, it happens. So that's how I do my reading. I'm going to be looking for some back issues tomorrow. Some Spawn, some old Marvel Star Wars. So
nice. You should definitely, when you read Batman make sure you read Batman 28 relatively soon because it's going to be a tie-in for their new weekly they're starting in March.
Fucking weeklies. Killing my budget.
Batman Eternal, man. It's going to be awesome.
I'm sure it will. You know what else would be awesome? What's not that? Getting to fill up my gas tank because there's a weekly Batman.
Hey, to be fair, you could theoretically from your house walk to Downtown Comics. That'd be like a week-long travel for me.
Theoretically, yes, I could. Will I? No.
We should get you a motorcycle. It's like $2 to fill the tank.
Well, you know, my old host, Dustin Leinenbach, actually willed me his motorcycle.
There you go.
And he's going to the gun range this weekend with his ex-wife. That's why
that
I made
like
him
a fantastic
will
plan.
It. Yeah. I was like, you, sir, this is not going well. So I get his
You're
motorcycle.
Brave man.
If he dies.
He's a brave man.
Yeah, well. Actually, maybe I'll put a snippet of that audio in here, because I made him will it to me, like, on the on a podcast. So maybe I'll throw that in here right now. Okay. Gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Versus.
Versus.
Today is the first day of Ragnarok. Wow, a Foley artist, you are not.
Nope, not at all.
sorry, just a second. There we go. Ragnarok, for those of you not in the know, is the end of days in the Viking culture. It's brought up a lot in Thor comics. For as far as I know, it's happened 3 or 4 times in the Marvel universe. Somehow they keep postponing Ragnarok. So what are we going to do? Who's the versus in celebration of the end of days in Viking culture?
I say for me, you know, you've got to have that, you know, so we got this 100-day long battle, and who's going to show up? Obviously, Odin is going to be there because he's kind of a big deal for Viking culture.
Kind of a big deal. But hey, we want to tie it back home. We're not Vikings anymore, right?
Right.
So, you know, who in Christianity was amalgamated to resemble Odin during one of their large feast times? One of their large celebrations. You know how they say, like, Easter, for instance, was the pagan spring solstice. Or not solstice, right. Equinox, mm-hmm. Vernal equinox or something. So we took that and we tied it into Christianity and made that Easter. You know, did Jesus really die in April? We don't know. Fuck. But we say it happened that way because that made it easier to incorporate the pagans into our religion. So, as a Catholic, I want to point out that Santa Claus, while he is a saint, St. Nicholas, was a dude that really lived. We amalgamated him into Santa Claus, who is based on Odin. Odin rode a chariot pulled by flying steeds. We changed those steeds into some reindeer. Kept the beard, gave him back one of his eyes, changed his armor into some red velvet. Because we like cake in Christianity. and so, the magic of Santa Claus versus Odin.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm feeling pretty good about this Odin pick. You're really going to have to get me with Santa Claus.
Well then, son. yeah, okay. So, let's start with, in Viking mythology, can the gods die?
Yes.
Yes. Now, through the power of Christ in Christianity, does Santa Claus have to die? No. That's Lazarus, true. Motherfucker. You knock Santa Claus out, he's just going to come back bigger and harder.
All
like
right,
a black
so,
dick.
Okay, so... Jesus. So let me get this straight. The people, like the top three that God resurrects for Christianity is Jesus, Ned Flanders, then Santa Claus?
Well, okay, Jesus only came back for like 10 minutes. He was like, hey, yo, I'm going to heaven. I'll see you later. Build a church on my rock here. It's all good. So, I mean, that was like a magic trick. That wasn't even really a whole resurrection, you know what I mean? Not to belittle you, Jesus, don't strike me with thunder. It's clear out. Strike me with lightning, Loki, or Thor. God damn it. I don't know what I'm saying, but it's clearly something is fucking me up here and making me just be completely sacrilegious in like 4 different cultures. I'm sorry.
I guess the question is, Do they have their crews backing them up? Because coming back to life requires that Santa Claus is taking on Odin with God, you know, watching his back, not on his own. And if that's the case, Then he also has an army of elves that could make infinite toys, and I'm sure that their workshop could be turned into a war factory.
So wait, so are these the same elves that we saw in Thor: The Dark World? With the dark elves of what heim were they? They weren't Jotunheim.
No, it's Sniffleheim.
Sniffleheim? Because they have a cold. Oh, you get the Sniffleheims.
No, no, they're totally the little claymation ones that sing while they're putting the warheads in the missile.
Except for that little blonde bitch that wants to be a dentist. So he's actually like the, from the Running Man, or the Marathon Man. He's the evil Nazi dentist. It's like, is it safe? Because it's time of war, right? Come on.
Jesus.
Don't call out help with him. You're Odin. I'm the Jesus guy.
So is the plan for Anna here to stop Rock and perhaps save, what, Christmas in March?
Sure. I mean, this is his off time. This is his down season. What else has he got to do?
That's true. He probably gets in shape, like, you know, spring training for baseball. He's been lifting weights and he's getting ready for it.
Spring training and baseball. Yeah, that's what he does. He does a lot of stomach stretching exercises for all the cookies.
Yep.
He does a lot of holding his breath for the chimneys. And then, of course, you know, he has to do squats because carrying the bag around.
It's true.
Yeah.
All to a ridiculous elf song montage.
And they're singing like the theme to Rocky, like da da da, but there's elf voice.
But it's all in harmony because there are like 50 of them.
50,000. Oh my God, Cody, you're killing us. Santa Claus has magic. Odin has magic. Odin has a gigantic ass sword.
Correct.
Santa has a bag that is apparently empty. It's like Dungeons and Dragons, it would be a bag of holding.
Yes.
So he could pull out of it any weapon he put in previously, right? Like Deadpool. Oh my God, Santa Claus is Deadpool.
That's horrific. Coming to you from Marvel Comics this December.
Did you ever read the or see the short film of Lobo Saves Christmas?
Oh God, no, but I need to now.
Yeah, it's somebody's student film that they made in college. It's on YouTube. It's like the Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special, I think it's called. And it's actually based on a Lobo comic. Fucking epic. Easter Bunny's in it. Santa Claus is in it. It's good stuff. Okay, hand-to-hand combat. I'm pretty sure Odin would win.
Although,
he doesn't have depth perception.
That's true.
Let's not count that out. That is a weakness. He has to use crows to see.
But he does have the Odin sight, so he can see everything. It's just a giant lack of depth. So he couldn't sneak up behind him. The elves sneaking up behind him are screwed.
That's funny. I'm immediately regretting picking Santa Claus.
Hey, don't doubt him out completely. I mean, he's got, you know, lightning fast speed if he can make it to every house and one.
Oh, yeah. Like, what do they say? If to go to every house, every Christian household with children, he'd have like 0.1 second at every house. And he'd have to move so fast that he would catch fire from the friction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worth noting.
Part
so
of that's got to be the elves, though. Well, yeah, definitely fireproof.
Fireproof, friction proof. Huh. So he almost has the powers of the Flash.
He would have to.
Man, he could like phase through Odin and pull his heart out. Ooh. I think we're on
but see here.
Santa Claus is scary.
Yes, your version anyway. Your version's like the Krampus.
The Krampus. The red suit's not it's not for the holiday season. It's to hide the blood stains.
I will make this point for Odin.
Okay.
That we've so far in this discussion have had to build up Santa Claus a lot. And Odin, we've just been, well, he's Odin, you know. He's just Odin. He's already there.
Everybody's seen the Thor movies. We know he has to go to the Odin sleep and then he's immortal again. Or not immortal, but very long lived, good healing factor. He is, you know, he has how many years of experience with wartime, with fighting? I mean, he is a warrior king. He had to overthrow his father to become the head god, the high god, just like in Greek mythology and Roman mythology.
I think the other question is, do we count predestination? Because the Book of Ragnarok says that Odin will be killed by a wolf at Ragnarok. So he can't die to Santa Claus if he's going to be killed by a wolf. And we all know how apocalyptic texts are always true.
Yes, clearly, because Ragnarok started the day.
Unless it turns out that Santa Claus is secretly the grandson of Loki, and then he would be that wolf.
So wait, Loki had three children. One of them is the, the giant fucking snake. Worm. Yeah, that thing.
Jormungandr or something, I believe.
Oh my god, we're bastardizing everything. Okay, fuck this, he's not a werewolf or whatever. He's just got regular people powers. I don't really see him being a wolf since he uses flying reindeer. Since they would be the foodstuffs of the wolf, that really doesn't work out for me too well.
That would have to be tempting while flying to have like a steak driving you around in your car. Like, how do you not eat that steak?
Mm. If my car ran on steak power, I wouldn't go anywhere. I'd be like, let's fill the tank up. That's the sound of a fat guy eating. Okay, let's call this. This is stupid. I'm sorry.
Odin wins.
Odin wins through sheer ferocity. But the beautiful part is that Santa Claus comes back in the end because he's a good pal with Jesus. He does celebrate his birthday every year. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was awful. Lame. Sorry. Moving on. Let's talk about fucking Jurassic Park.
Let's do that.
Who wants to start? Where's your Jurassic Park origins?
Well, mine are short, if that
matters. Let's do yours.
All right, so I have one horrible story to relate. I will first admit that I'm not a huge Jurassic Park fan. I'll caveat the story with that first. But if I explain the story very quickly, I think you will understand. The first time I saw the first film on VHS, so did not see it in theaters. Because both of you are, both of you are slightly older than me. So I don't know, how old were you when the film came out?
12.
We've already established
10, something like that.
I say, because I know Craig, you're like a year or two older than me, so I was probably 7, 8 somewhere in there. Watched it on VHS, and I got horrible stomach flu roughly a third of the way into the film, so like right when the dinosaurs showed up, and I did nothing but vomit the entire film. I think because my dad didn't want to shut it off because he had rented the tape. So I did nothing but vomit as dinosaurs chase people. So I now equate people being chased by dinosaurs to me expelling the contents of my stomach.
I can't eat Jell-O for the same reason. One time I threw up while eating Jell-O. Oh, can't do Southern Comforts either.
Ugh. So there you go. That's basically it. Never read the books. I don't think I've ever seen Jurassic Park 2 or 3 to completion.
Oh my god. What the fuck is
that
wrong
is
with you?
That
is a shame. Like a hence why I was like... lesbian. Craig, you know everything about Jurassic Park. You should come on the show, because I'll be useless.
I actually have a very similar origin story.
I have the flu is involved in mine, too. Go ahead.
So, no, it's in that I didn't actually see Jurassic Park all the way through the first time I went to see it.
What the fuck is wrong with you two? Fucking well, babies.
actually, I got the flu, I'm gonna throw literally up. more than you know, because... my dad took me to see Jurassic Park, and again, I was like 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. And right after, you know, we were in the theater, I wasn't used to going to the theater, and we were in the back near the big speakers, and the T-Rex was crashing through and roaring, and it was really loud, and I got scared and asked him to leave. I went home like a little baby, because I was scared witless. And here's the worst part. And, you know, I couldn't own up to that to the other school kids on the playground. So I always told them, you know, back in the day that my dad was the one who got scared and who left because he got scared. Blamed it on him.
Nice.
I would like to point out.
I did make it up to him exactly 20 years later because last year the 20th anniversary came out in theaters in 3D. And I took him to go see it for his birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, 1993, which means I would have been 5 years old when it came out.
Fuck you. Wow. I'm old. Okay, it came out the summer I was 11 years old. I saw it 3 times in theaters. I was a huge dinosaur kid. Second only to Ninja Turtles was dinosaurs for me. So when Jurassic Park came out, and this was the most realistic depiction of a dinosaur you'd ever seen at the time, I was like, oh, I was all about it. So we went... right before my 12th birthday, we went. And I went repeatedly for like 2 weeks. Loved the movie. Thought it was great. But a problem in my life at that time was I was not a big reader. I was always an honor student, always had the honor roll and what have you, but I hated reading. I never read recreationally. I'd only read when they forced me to at school. And that fall, after I turned 12, I got the flu. And that week at school, we had started this program where every 20 pages that you read recreationally, you got a sticker on this chart. And there was room for 20 stickers, so 400 pages. So first person to read it won a prize or whatever. And we would have to get a signed note from our parents, and we read this many pages. So I got the flu on a Thursday. Got sent home. I think it was actually the same flu I got that made me hate Jell-O. Was I threw up at school. I just ate. Remember they had those Kool-Aid Squeeze-Its?
Yeah, I think so.
They had like their plastic bottles, and you'd squeeze the juice in your mouth. Well, they also had one called Jell-Oos, and it was Jell-O in a Squeeze-It bottle, which is already gross, kind of. And so, yes. Like, I squeezed it in, and then I threw up. And so haven't had a lot of Jell-O since then. However, sorry, long story long, I went home. My mom was always so great about when I had a sick day from school, she would get me a sick pack. And there'd be like some Skittles in it and some comic books, you know, maybe a toy, something to occupy me. She'd rent a movie or something. And she got me the Michael Crichton novel Jurassic Park, of which the film was based on. Because I collected everything I could get my hands on that was Jurassic Park. Like McDonald's had a big Jurassic Park push that year. So like your fry container looked like the open mouth of a T-Rex. I kept it. You know, I like put it on my wall. So I was all about everything Jurassic Park. So my mom got this book for me. It was like the thickest book I'd ever held in my hand. Book came out in 1990. And I started reading it and I was immediately hooked. The book is 399 pages long. So when I went back to school on Monday, I had completed my 400-page chart after it had just started the week before, and I got all the points and won all the prizes, which was awesome. But this book gave me the love I have for reading now, to the point that I can't go to bed at night unless I've read for an hour minimum. You know, I go through books so fast that I have to reread the same books over and over again. You know, I've probably read Jurassic Park probably 20 times in my life. Have you read it, Craig?
Three times, actually, and I just reread it the third time a couple months ago.
Oh, very good. Wonderful book. Lost World is also a wonderful book. Jurassic Park 3 had no book because it was stupid. Of course, now Michael Crichton's dead. I wanted to actually take a little moment here and read an excerpt from Jurassic Park, the novel. I want to compare it to the movie. You guys with me?
All right, let's hear it.
Oh, yes.
So what I'm reading is a small chapter called Nedry, and it is the scene in the film in which Dennis Nedry, played by Newman from Seinfeld, Wayne Knight, is being attacked by the Dilophosaurus. The Dilophosaurus in the books, like in real life, Dilophosaurus are 10 feet tall. In the movie, it's only like 4 feet tall. It's a little dinosaur, right? So I'm just going to, it's about 3 pages here, so just bear with me, okay?
All right.
And as we at this point in the story, Nedry has the embryos, and he is trying to escape the island. He's trying to get to the boat to get his embryos to his contact there so he can get his riches. So if you'll allow me to read. The sign said electric fence, 10,000 volts, do not touch. But Nedry opened it with his bare hand and unlocked the gate, swinging it wide. He went back to the jeep, drove through the gate, and then walked back to close it behind him. Now he was inside the park itself. No more than a mile from the east dock, he stepped on the accelerator and hunched forward over the steering wheel, peering through the rain-slashed windshield as he drove the jeep down the narrow road. He was driving fast, too fast, but he had to keep on his timetable. He was surrounded on all sides by black jungle, but soon he should be able to see the beach and the ocean off to his left. This damn storm, he thought. It might screw up everything, because if Dotson's boat wasn't waiting for him at the east dock, when Nedry got there, the whole plan would be ruined. Nedry couldn't wait very long, or he'd be missed back at the control room. The whole idea behind the plan was that he could drive to the east dock, drop off the embryos, and be back in a few minutes before anyone noticed. It was a good plan, a clever plan. Nedry'd worked on it carefully, refining every detail. Then his plan was going to make him $500,000. make him $1.5 million, 1.5 meg. That was 10 years of income in a single tax-free shot, and it was going to change his life. Nedry'd been damned careful, even to the point of making Dodson meet him at the San Francisco airport at the last minute with an excuse about wanting to see the money. Actually, Nedry wanted to record his conversation with Dodson and mentioned him by name on the tape, just so Dodson wouldn't forget he owed the rest of the money. Nedry was including a copy of the tape with the embryos. In short, Nedry had thought of everything, except this damn storm. Something dashed across the road, a white flash in his headlights. It looked like a large rat. It scurried into the underbrush, dragging a fat tail. Possum. Amazing that a possum could survive here. You'd think the dinosaurs would get an animal like that. Where was the damn dock? He was driving fast and he'd already been gone 5 minutes. He should have reached the east dock by now. Had he taken a wrong turn? He didn't think so. He hadn't seen any forks in the road at all. Then where was the dock? It was a shock when he came around a corner and saw that the road terminated in a gray concrete barrier, 6 feet tall, streaked dark with rain. He slammed on the brakes and the Jeep fishtailed, losing traction in an end-to-end spin, and for a horrified moment he thought he was going to smash into the barrier. He knew he was going to smash, and he spun the wheel frantically, and the Jeep slid to a stop, the headlamps just a foot from the concrete wall. He paused there, listening to the rhythmic flick of the wipers. He took a deep breath and exhaled slowly. He looked back down the road. He'd obviously taken a wrong turn somewhere. He could retrace his steps, but that would take too long. He'd better try and find out where the hell he was. He got out of the Jeep, feeling heavy raindrops spatter his head. It was a real tropical storm, raining so hard that it hurt. He glanced at his watch, pushing the button to illuminate the digital dial. 6 minutes gone. Where the hell was he? He walked around the concrete barrier, and on the other side, along with the rain, he heard the sound of gurgling water. Could it be the ocean? Nedry hurried forward, his eyes adjusting to the darkness as he went. Dense jungle on all sides, raindrops slapping on the leaves. The gurgling sound became louder, drawing him forward, and suddenly he came out of the foliage and felt his feet sink into soft earth and saw the dark currents of the river. The river! He was at the Jungle River! Damn, he thought! At the river where? The river ran for miles through the island. He looked at his watch again. 7 minutes gone. You have a problem, Dennis, he said aloud. As if in reply, there was a soft hooting of an owl in the forest. Nedry hardly noticed. He was worrying about his plan. The plain fact was that the time had run out. There wasn't a choice anymore. He had to abandon his original plan. All he could do was go back to the control room, restore the computer, and somehow try to contact Dodson and set up the drop at the East Dock for the following night. Nedry would have to scramble to make that work, but he thought he could pull it off. The computer automatically logged all calls. After Nedry got through to Dodson, he'd have to go back into the computer and erase the record of the call. But one thing was sure, he couldn't stay out in the park any longer, or his absence would be noticed. Nedry started back, heading toward the glow of the car's headlights. He was drenched and miserable. He heard the soft hooting cry once more, and this time he paused. That hadn't really sounded like an owl, and it seemed to be close by, in the jungle somewhere off to his right. As he listened, he heard a crashing sound in the underbrush, and then silence. He waited and heard it again. It sounded distinctly like something big, moving slowly through the jungle toward him. Something big, something near. A big dinosaur. Get out of here. Nedry began to run. He made a lot of noise as he ran, but even so he could hear the animal crashing through the foliage and hooting. It was coming closer. Stumbling over tree roots in the darkness, clawing his way past dripping branches, he saw the Jeep ahead, and the lights shining through the vertical wall of the barrier made him feel better. In a moment, he'd be in the car, and then he'd get the hell out of here. He scrambled around the barrier, and then he froze. The animal was already there. But it wasn't close. The dinosaur stood 40 feet away at the edge of the illumination from the headlamps. Nedry hadn't taken the tour, so he hadn't seen the different types of dinosaurs. But this one was strange-looking. The 10-foot-tall body was yellow with black spots, and along the head ran a pair of red V-shaped crests. The dinosaur didn't move, but again gave its soft hooting cry. Nedry waited to see if it would attack, and it didn't. Perhaps the headlights from the Jeep frightened it, forcing it to keep its distance, like a fire. The dinosaur stared at him, and then snapped its head in a single, swift motion. Nedry felt something smack wetly against his chest. He looked down and saw a dripping glob of foam on his rain-soaked shirt, and he touched it curiously, not comprehending. It was spit. The dinosaur had spit on him. It was creepy, he thought. He looked back at the dinosaur and saw the head snap again and immediately felt another wet smack against his neck, just above the shirt collar. He wiped it away with his hand. Jesus, it was disgusting. but the skin of his neck was already starting to tingle and burn, and his hand was tingling too. It was almost like he had been touched with acid. Nedry opened the car door, glancing back at the dinosaur to make sure it wasn't going to attack, and felt a sudden, excruciating pain in his eyes, stabbing like spikes into the back of his skull, and he squeezed his eyes shut and gasped with the intensity of it, and threw up his hands to cover his eyes and felt the slippery foam trickling down both sides of his nose. Spit. The dinosaur had spit in his eyes. Even as he realized it, the pain overwhelmed him and he dropped to his knees, disoriented and wheezing. He collapsed onto his side, cheek pressed to the wet ground, his breath coming in thin whistles through the constant, ever-screaming pain that caused flashing spots of light to appear behind his tightly shut eyelids. The earth shook beneath him, and Nedry knew the dinosaur was moving. He could hear its soft hooting cry, and despite the pain, he forced his eyes open, and still he saw nothing but flashing spots against black. Slowly the realization came to him he was blind. The hooting was louder as Nedry scrambled to his feet, staggered back against the side panel of his car, as a wave of nausea and dizziness swept over him. The dinosaur was close now. He could feel it coming close. He was dimly aware of its snorting breath, but he couldn't see. He couldn't see anything, and his terror was extreme. He stretched out his hands, waving them wildly in the air to ward off the attack that he knew was coming. And then there was a new searing pain, like a fiery knife in his belly, and Nedry stumbled, reaching blindly down to touch the ragged edge of his shirt, and then a slick, slippery mass that was surprisingly warm, and with horror, he suddenly knew he was holding his own intestines in his hand. The dinosaur had torn him open, and his guts had fallen out. Nedry fell to the ground and landed on something scaly and cold. It was the animal's foot. And then there was new pain on both sides of his head. The pain grew worse, and he was lifted to his feet. He knew the dinosaur had its head, had his head in its jaws, and the horror of that realization was followed by a final wish that it would all be ended soon. So, 12-year-old Matt reads that, and I'm like, oh shit, son, it just got real. Like, no fucking movie's gonna compare to that, the inner monologue of a man holding his own guts because a fucking dinosaur bit his tummy open. So since then, I have been a Jurassic Parkophile. I've even gone so far as to perform that scene in an oral interpretation of lit class in college. I love it so fucking much. All right, we're going to pause here because the train just went, or the train is coming. I can hear it.
Okay.
So let me make a note. At this point, Craig, you may start talking. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry.
On pause, or are we still waiting?
No, oh yeah, we're still on pause. You'll hear the train in a minute.
I'm sorry, I can hear its whistle.
My dad just came in and took a beer out of the garage while I was talking. It's kind of funny.
It never ceases to amaze me that I go into the office and close the door and keep silent and, you know, try to do anything. As soon as we start recording, bang, Ambrosia kicks open the door and the dog comes running in. Like, what are you doing? Jesus.
It's funny, dude. Train, 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 train.
Choo-choo.
That scene in the book has always struck me. I just fucking love that. Like in the book, dude, the Hammond gets eaten by the little compies.
Oh yeah,
little tiny dinosaurs. Gennaro, the lawyer, actually lives in the end. Fucking like everybody that dies in the movie lives, and everybody that lives in the movie dies. It's fucking weird.
I was just say it seems to me like Crichton, which makes sense, was a lot more dark. And maybe scientific and, you know.
Have you read any of his books?
I'm trying to think. For some reason, I think I've read excerpts of it for class, but I've never actually sat down and read one of his major novels.
His novels are all like that. They're very scientifically based, but all have a fantastical element. Like Timeline, for instance, has to do with time travel, but it does it through the use of quantum computers.
Yeah.
Let's see. Sphere is about... them finding an alien ship under the ocean that's been there for like 1,000 years.
I love that movie. God, do I love that movie.
Oh my God, really?
I love that movie.
Oh, we didn't talk about the movie. We didn't talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, did we?
No. I noticed you do that, and I was like, well, I'm not going to tell him. We're on a roll. Let's go Jurassic Park.
Fair enough. Jurassic Park would be the geek movie of the week. I'm picturing the bump be like the sound of like a projector.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So we'll have to hunt around and find a open source one that we can use so we don't get sued. We have a copyright lawyer on staff here. One of the hosts, Jeff Gorm, is a copyright lawyer. So he pro bono tells us what we can do and not do.
The site I've always used for theater is called freesound.org, mm-hmm. and people upload with the knowledge that other people are going to download it and utilize it for various purposes.
Do you have to accredit them?
I do not know. I think it specifies based on the sound file.
Okay. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it would require a little bit of digging.
Okay, train's gone. So, guys, what do you think of that little bit of fiction?
It's horror. I mean, don't get me wrong. For 5-year-old me, that movie was very scary. But that's very morbid and dark, which Crichton is known for writing.
Yeah, in the first movie, 6 people died, but there was never blood. There was always a tree limb in the way or something. Like when Robert Muldoon gets attacked by the raptors, and you see a raptor bend down and bite his face. There's a big branch in the way, so that you don't see the grossness. The grossest thing in the whole movie is Sam Jackson's arm. And there's not like a bloody stumpy body around. It's just the arm. That's the only like gruesome part in the film. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, it's always been a good example of what the translation of book to screen and what the human imagination can do. And that, so, you know, if you want to be absolutely terrified, and Jurassic Park is a great book and film for being terrified. I mean, there are moments where a particular dinosaur, you know, reading through the novel, you know, he gives a good description, but what Spielberg brought to life might be worse than your wildest imagination for a particular reader. And, you know, so the screen might be the much more terrifying portion, whereas, you know, another reader, what he can imagine in his mind from reading pages like that could be much worse than anything anybody could ever put on film.
You know, that harkens back to Jaws. You know, the Bruce, the animatronic shark they built never worked right. So they couldn't have it on screen as often as they wanted. And so instead of having a shark attack, you'd have this like foreboding, like you'd see the scene above the water instead of under the water like they anticipated. And that made the film much more terrifying because you never saw the attack. So maybe, I mean, that's Spielberg's calling card. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, he's always been known for using, and that movie does a great job. I mean, the storm, the rain, they lose the electricity, that, you know, everything, all the modern conveniences are gone, and now you are symbolically caveman versus dinosaurs. I mean, being a little kid, I couldn't help but be terrified in the clicking on the metal. Like, that just drove me nuts.
Oh, that kitchen scene?
It freaks me out. Yes, that is horrifying.
And you know, when I went and saw it, I was probably the same age as the boy in that, or the girl. And oh my god, you're just like, would I be able to do that? No. I would have, my 12-year-old heart would have gave out. I'd have been so fucking piss scared. Give me a zombie apocalypse any day of the week, man. Fucking raptors? No. Fuck you. I will fucking off myself.
I gotta give it to Crichton too, because, you know, one of the greatest things to do in horror is to juxtapose it against comedy, and then when you go from the high of the comedy down into the horror, it makes it that much worse. And I think especially, you know, as kids, I mean, you look at dinosaurs in, you know, science class or poster on your wall, and you know, they're just cool looking animals that you don't see in real life, and you're just like, oh, that looks awesome, but you don't realize how utterly horrifying and terrifying they would be in real life.
But yeah, Joe's favorite game, he'll be 2.5 in like 2 weeks. His favorite game is for me to be pretend I'm a dinosaur and chase him. And he's like, he'll be a daddy dinosaur, chase me. Like, okay.
And he has no idea how really bad that would be.
Yeah, someday he's going to watch Jurassic Park and he's going to be like, fuck that game.
ass. We're not playing that anymore, Dad.
You know what I always also loved about Jurassic Park films is that, you know, and this happens all the time with book-to-screen adaptations, is that they can't fit everything in 2 hours. There were a lot of great scenes and story elements in the books, Jurassic Park and Lost World, both, that did not make it into the films. And some of those things they just changed to make it work as a screenplay. But some of those elements that they just straight had to cut, like the river chase in the Jurassic Park novel, didn't make it into the first two films, but ended up being it was a huge plot element in the novel, ended up being a huge plot element in Jurassic Park 3. And they because I think, if I remember correctly, Crichton actually wrote the Lost World novel after the movie was already in development. So he co-wrote it as a movie and as a novel at the same time.
Yeah, the 1997 saw the film and the book come out the same year.
Right. And so there was a scene in Jurassic Park the movie where they said, you know, T-Rex's eyesight's based on movement, you know. It stands still. And he in the Lost World novel had a moment where they were in the T-Rex nest and they said, okay, you know, stand perfectly still, you'll be fine, it won't see you. And there's this terrifying moment where one of these guys is standing there in the nest and he thinks he's gonna be okay, and the T-Rex is sniffing him and everything's gonna be okay, and then out of nowhere it just chomps right down on him. And someone else who's observing this just has this great little monologue moment where he says, oh my God, we were so terribly, terribly wrong.
Well, yeah, it's actually one of the little kids, Arby, in the second book, is saying, why is he just standing there? And Dr. Levine says, because he was misinformed. And then they go into this long diatribe in the book, because Crichton likes to write from a science point of view, goes into this long diatribe about how one paleontologist had took a cast of the brain pan of a Tyrannosaurus Rex skull and figured that it resembled a frog in that it only sees movement. And that was later disputed in scientific circles and mm-hmm. has been since disproven. And it was disproven between the first book and the second book. And so that's how they were able to do that, which I thought was so cool. That they're just exactly. tying it into real world science.
And I love Crichton and Spielberg. Now Spielberg only produced the third movie, he didn't direct it, but for me, Jurassic Park is one of my favorite examples of the play of elements that can go back and forth between the book and screen adaptations.
Absolutely. I mean, okay, in the first book, the opening scene in the second movie with the little girl being attacked by compies, that's from the first book.
Mm-hmm.
In the third movie, the whole, like you said, the river chase scene, and then also the where they go into the aviary with the pterodactyls, that's from the first book, from the original book. Yeah, they had to take so many elements from that book and put it. They took three movies to get everything from the first book out there. Very interesting. You know, they hiding in a cave below a waterfall, and the T-Rex sticking out its 3-foot long tongue and trying to grab people. That was in the second movie. But in the first book, very interesting stuff.
The one thing that never made, I don't think ever made into the movies was the whole tunnel element, which I don't think a lot of people were aware of. That in the book, there was this network of tunnels underneath the island, mm-hmm. much like in Disney World in Florida. That actually did make an element into the Jurassic Park game that Telltale Games released last year, which was a fantastic game, by the way.
Well, and it was in the original Jurassic Park video game too, that came out after the movie. Because at the end, when you think you've beaten everything, you have to go into the tunnels and destroy the raptor nest.
Now, is that the SNES top down? That was a lot of fun. Now, I did love that game.
Oh my God! The only thing you could use on the T-Rex was the tranquilizer gun. Everything else would just glance off of it. Oh, I love that game. But yeah, that's a big element. Like you know, like Lord of the Rings. You read the books and you watch the movie, and like the point that the movie ends, there's still a whole adventure afterwards in the book where they return to Hobbiton and it's an occupied territory full of orcs. Same thing in the book. After they figured out how to get off the island, they got everything set up again. Now they have to go into the raptor nest and destroy all the eggs so that the raptors don't continue breeding. So fucked up.
But fantastic.
Oh my God. Wonderful. It's like edge of your seat. Like, you know, you're on the edge of the seat when you watch a horror flick, but when you're reading a book and you're on the edge of your seat, you know it's a good goddamn book. How do you do on comics? Have you ever read Jurassic Park comics?
I read all the ones I've been able to get my hands on so far, which is only a small handful.
When the movie came out, they, of course, adapted it to comic books. I think Topps made the comics. And I had bought a couple issues back in the day. I can't find them now. I don't know where they're at. But I was in a half-price bookstore about a year ago, and they had a bound edition of Jurassic Park comics for $4.99. I was like, oh, my God, and they had a huge stack of them. I was like, how'd they get all these? This is great. So I went and bought one, took it home and read it, and it was the most amazing piece of shit that I've ever come across in comics history. It was based on the movies. So the movies have already happened. It's about Tim and Lex as adults. And they are, Lex is in charge of InGen, and she's all about trying to repair their image and do everything. And Tim also works for InGen, but he has created a Site B in Texas where they are building dinosaurs again. And it's all through a private financier. And it turns out in the very end, the private financier is their wheelchair-bound uncle from the second film, the one whom you think gets eaten by the T-Rex baby in the boat. He actually survived. Doesn't have a face left. He looks like that guy from Hannibal, but just the worst fucking comic, because like everybody looks the same in it, so you can't tell panel to panel what characters are talking.
Nice.
Just a fucking awful. And of course, the dinosaurs get out. They have to wrangle them all, and they end up decimating the small Texas town. But fuck, if that wasn't the worst goddamn comic I've ever read. Like, no wonder they had a huge stack. It probably came directly from my downtown comics. They probably just took them over there and said, here, whatever you got, just take it.
We'll pay you to take these off our hands.
Yeah, that was an IDW printing. So I don't know if anybody's going to try to redo the Jurassic Park comics, but fuck, that was an awful.
Well, but I mean, that's the interesting thing. Like, we're talking about Spielberg, who obviously knows how to make films work. We're talking about Crichton, who, you know, understands the intricacies of writing and horror, and they got together and created a, you know, well, albeit probably not, you know, the book version that you would want if you're a fan of the novel. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they brought dinosaurs to life. Like, yeah. Those things were terrifying. They were beautiful and terrifying, and it's really interesting because, like we've been saying, we were all kids at the time, and we all grew up, I'm sure, loving dinosaurs. But thinking about the world actually at that time, Crichton's probably a lot closer to the mark than we care to teach children, at least.
Man, I remember when it was out of theaters and I had to stop, going and seeing it. It was like, oh man, so okay, it's the summertime, 1993. It'll probably be out by Christmas on VHS. So, you know, of course, I was at the top of the Christmas list was Jurassic Park Video. Didn't come out. Next year at Christmas, top of the list, Jurassic Park. Still was not out. It took 2 years for them to put it on VHS, which created such a fervor that it was able to push The Lost World through so fast.
Interesting.
Yeah, fun fact for you there.
I wonder why.
I remember the day that it was scheduled to be released, my mom used to work at Target, and one of her friends was still working there, and so I gave her the money and had her promise that she would buy it that day, that I could get it. I remember sitting in German class in the seventh grade, when Target opened and thought, I now own Jurassic Park. And I went home and I watched it till that fucking VHS bled. Oh, my God. I don't have the Blu-rays, though. Does anybody get the Blu-rays? Is there a Blu-ray set? I'm sure there is.
Not the Blu-ray. I had the DVD box set. It was fantastic with the doors that opened up on the front cover. It was awesome. Unfortunately,
I'm so jealous of you.
I had about 75 DVDs stolen once, and that was my biggest loss right there, was the box set.
Oh, no. I had them all on DVD, too, but I bought them singularly. So, yeah. Oh, I haven't watched it in years now. Now I have the itch. Now I need to go watch Jurassic Park. Thanks. Dicks. Oh, my God.
Well, I did watch those so much growing up. There were nights, I mean, I like Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, there are some things as a kid that you watch those movies 100 times.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The Jurassic Park movies were that for me, and there were so many nights it'd be late, I'd be watching Lost World, and it would be dark, and I would be scared to leave the living room to go back to my bedroom because I was convinced there were velociraptors in the hallway waiting for me.
didn't you want to be a velociraptor, like, just something like it? You know what I mean? Like, the amount of power that they show you, that those creatures had, it just, I don't know. It made them almost a hero of the film, even though they were the bad guy, technically.
I mean, seeing them, I mean, because I can, well, I mean, before that time, it was pictures and books. So to be able to see them move and to run and to, that was the thing I think that really rubbed off on me. I don't know if you guys, there was a, I think it was when Windows 3.1 became real big and everybody was getting, you know, Packard Bell computers. Did either of you have the 3D dinosaur game that was really big back then?
No.
Mm-mm.
say they came out with, I knew a bunch of people who had it, and it was so cool. It was like playing, or it was like watching Jurassic Park, because they had a 3D game where basically you just watched short videos of dinosaurs and history, but you wore the 3D glasses and got to see them move, and to just see the power and the, you know, the ability of something that big. Like, we would be, well, just like the excerpt you read, we would be like ants to them, even the small ones. They mm-hmm. would just obliterate us.
Well, you say that, but, you know, there was, like, the Mosasaurus, which was, it would fit in your hand. The Compsognathus was the size of a chicken. I remember I was so into dinosaurs that when I was 13, my grandma took me to a lecture at IUPUI. This major paleontologist was coming through town and did a speaking circuit. And they had a dinner with dinosaurs, it was called. And so everything on your plate was something a dinosaur would eat. So, like, our salad was made out of oak leaves and flowers, you know, and we had, like, a Cornish game hen or something. And I just remember being, like, enthralled with it. And my grandma's sitting there, and she's told me the story since then. She was like, she couldn't understand the things this guy was saying, and that she looked over at me, and I'm just hanging on every fucking word. Because what this man was known for was the Compsognathus from Jurassic Park. Because of it being such a small dinosaur, its bones were so delicate that there's only one complete fossil of it. And that his thing was, there used to be four complete fossils. And what he did was he went around and studied them and realized that they were Archaeopteryx, which is another... Mm. This is boring. I'll shut up now.
Nerd.
Either way... I really enjoy dinosaurs. Yes.
College lick.
I know, and then of all the things in the world that interest me, I did not go into paleontology. Because at the time that I was ready to go to college, they said that that 99% of the world's fossils have been discovered and found. And so that paleontologists now, it's all theory work. It's all piecing it together and understanding what dinosaurs did. And I was like, I don't want to do that, man. I'm going to go find this shit.
But I think what's fascinating, though, is the way that they keep let's say it's the argument that people have with history and science. They keep changing it because, you know, they're still figuring things out. Like you said, that's what fascinates me. So they think they have all these together and they're like, oh, nope, we put the wrong head on this one, or this one doesn't fit here, mm-hmm. or maybe they were covered in feathers. We don't know. That's what I think is really cool, which is the only reason why I would support them, you know, genetically recreating them, so we'd actually see if they'd pop out with feathers or something.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be fucking awesome?
I think for about 5 minutes.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Because it's not like they would... I mean, the technology and the capabilities that we have nowadays, there's no way that something that large as a biological entity without any means of, like, coherent thought could take over the world, you know? If we discovered a nest of velociraptors in South America, we would nuke it. You know, we could take them all the fuck out in one fell swoop. It's no big deal. So I think fucking genetically do whatever you want. If you can clone a dinosaur and bring it back, cloning is, when you think about it, cloning is an easy process in the long run. All they do is you take an egg cell from a donor, remove the nucleus, and you replace the nucleus with any cell from another organism, and whatever that cell is, it becomes the clone. So if they took one piece of your fingernail, one molecule of fingernail from Cody Grady, and put it inside of a pig egg, you would be born. So cloning is not that difficult. I mean, now getting a viable embryo from a cloned gamete is significantly more difficult, but God, if we were able to do it, wouldn't it be amazing?
You would be the most irresponsible mad scientist ever.
Are you kidding me? I'm already a mad scientist. Come into my garage someday, Cody. The things I build in here. I make my own fireworks. Because the stores are pussies.
I'll wait for the big foom that I hear from several miles away.
Oh, my God.
There are scientists working out. There was a Popular Science or Wired article a year or two ago. They're taking chickens and giving them dinosaur parts and tails and mouths and feet. They're working on it.
Yeah, they're able to go in and shut off the genetic markers that make a bird in the modern era. And they're finding that the features that these birds come with are very dinosaur-like because, you know, what we know now is that dinosaurs probably weren't reptiles. They're more related to birds, just like Alan Grant told us in Jurassic Park. So yeah, you know what we're missing is we need that missing link. We need to find the skeleton of something that's halfway between a bird and a dinosaur. That's what we need. That would put this whole debate to rest.
Just you need like, your Tiktaalik. That's what you need. You need your Tiktaalik for dinosaurs.
What's a Tiktaalik?
Tiktaalik is it's the only thing I remember from Bio 101 in college. Let me see if I can find a picture of it to send to you. Tiktaalik is like the we went from being so like, oh, everything was in the ocean and then everything walked. So it's like there should be somewhere out there a fish with legs. Tiktaalik is basically the fish with legs.
Oh, okay, okay.
So you need that. You need your bird dino hybrid.
I was going a little more specific, but yeah, sure. Not a hybrid necessarily, but you know.
No. Just it's just a straight chain. We have feathers, and now we're small.
Like some fucking tiny dinosaur mutant with feathers was born, and it was so genetically superior that it outlived everything else.
Exactly.
Which think of it, you know, when the ice age from that asteroid occurred. The only thing that could have happened was dinosaurs would have to migrate towards where the Earth was still warm. And from there, they would have evolved. So
there you go.
So here's where I have to take a departure from geekiness of real science, and that I love the idea of connecting dinosaurs with feathers and my movie love, in that I have to go with movie canon velociraptors that are featherless. Even though they may have had feathers in real life, I can't do feathered velociraptors on the screen. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Because my son loves Dinosaur Train, which is a PBS show. And the velociraptors in that look like they're wearing sweaters because they have these little feathers all over them. It's ridiculous. And what about Jurassic Park 3? Didn't a couple of the velociraptors have feathers?
Yes, they did.
So how did they go from the first one not having any feathers to the third one having feathers? Did they evolve in that 10-year period? Because that's amazing.
Like 64,000 years of evolution in 10 years.
Yeah, no big deal. No.
In that case, just like quarantine the area and just wait 10 years and you'll have a whole bunch of chickens on that island.
Jurassic Park 3, which brought us 3D printing technology before it was ever a thing. You remember when they made the vocal chamber of a velociraptor in that printer?
Mm-hmm.
That was fucked up.
But that's actually where my mind goes to every time someone mentions 3D printing.
Yeah. If you could blow the idea that you could just take that and blow into one end of it and the other end sounds like a velociraptor is ridiculous. And like if you watch Jurassic Park and you hear the raptors, you know, screaming, then you watch Jurassic Park 3 and you go to where that fucking insipid motherfucker blows into the hole. They don't sound alike at all, but Alan Grant's like, oh my god, it's like they're right here. No, it's not, Alan. Did you not watch the first movie, Sam Neill? Jesus. Asshole.
So I do have to say, I'm really excited that the director of Jurassic World, which for those who aren't in those, is basically Jurassic Park 4, which is called Jurassic World coming up, did promise there will be no feathers on the dinosaurs.
He's probably like a Southern Baptist that believes that we're only 5,000 years old and we used to run around with dinosaurs back in the day. Not to make fun of any of our Southern Baptist listeners out there, but
I'm sure there are a bunch.
Completely fucked.
What's also incredibly exciting is that Jack Horner, the famous paleontologist who is the technical advisor for all the previous Jurassic Park films, is...
And the character of Alan Grant was based on Jack Horner.
Yes. He's involved in the fourth one again, and he's been on record saying that they're introducing a new dinosaur that we haven't seen before in the previous films as a new villain, and it's just supposed to be utterly terrifying. They won't... You know, officially say who it is. I have a couple of ones I'm hoping it will be. There's a Herrerasaurus that has been mentioned in Jurassic Park canon. It was on the official map. It was kind of like twice the size of a velociraptor, kind of halfway between a T-Rex and a velociraptor. But the thing would stalk
is that the
you.
Famous Utah raptor?
No, it's a different thing.
Okay.
But this Herrerasaurus, what made it terrifying is that it would stalk you for miles and miles and miles before coming in for the kill.
Hmm.
There's also another one that I would be really excited to see. It's not technically a dinosaur, but it's called a Saurosuchus, I believe, Which, okay, so imagine take a crocodile, put a T-Rex head on this crocodile, and give it fully extendable legs, so it walks upright, you know, and it can stand on two hind legs, so it's, you know, kind of looking like a Godzilla type creature here, and make it a little bit larger than a rhinoceros. It's utterly terrifying.
That sounds like a Dimetrodon, which was not a dinosaur because carnivores were all, you know, two legged, bipedal. Okay, you know what? I have the nerd ideas in my head, and I just don't want to bring them all out. There's so many. So they make the bad guy of a raptor size. I mean, larger raptor, but like how they did in the third movie, they're like, okay, T-Rex isn't the bad guy in this one. We're going to use Spinosaurus aegypticus. And they brought out a super predator that was larger. It occurred much earlier than the T-Rex in the evolutionary chain. But it was a larger super predator. They're not doing that with this. We're not going to get like a Godzilla-esque sized fucking bad guy, or
it's all unconfirmed at this point. We don't know, but it's got to be something good because Spinosaurus was a big letdown.
You know, you say that, man. That shit creeped me out. I didn't know anything about Spinosaurus when I went into the movie, and it just astounded me. It's like, wow.
It didn't do anything for me. What I wanted to see was more of the Allosaurus that we got, like a, you know.
No, that was like
a cameo.
That was a Carnotaurus.
Oh, you're correct.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Oh, yeah, Craig, don't fuck with me in Jurassic Park.
No.
I'm just sitting back in awe right now because I first tried to follow along with pictures, and I'm just like, I'm just going to make up what they look like in my head as they talk.
I'm going to stop Googling this. No, the Carnotaurus, it's a dinosaur. It's bipedal fucking meat eater, and when you see it, you'd always see it with a horn on its nose. In the second book, they did a really creepy segment with it. They were like chameleon-like. And so they could, in very advanced chameleon style evolution, they could be nearly invisible. You could walk right next to one and not see it. And it made for a very creepy section in the book where all the characters are holed out in this abandoned gas station. And they don't realize that the raptors have not attacked them because they're in the territory of another predator that the raptors are scared of. But in the third movie, they just show the dinosaur briefly for a minute. It was almost like a nod to people that read the book. And that was it. Because if they did that in Jurassic World, if they bring that scene to life, they can have all my fucking money. They can have all of it. I will will my estate to Universal Pictures.
And all the millions that it contains.
Millions of pennies.
You know, I think that what we need to do, though, you need to get Robert Kirkman to get interested on this Jurassic Park thing, because I think that we just need to have like Jurassic Park Australia, because lots of things down there kill people anyway, but my guess is those people would be able to cope since they deal with like gigantic spiders and stuff. So it'd be a little Walking Dead, little Jurassic Park.
Okay. You know, here at Follow Networks, we are a collaborative group, and we do make little fun bouts of fiction together as a group. So if you want to do zombie dinosaurs, I'm sure we can get it working. We're already doing a zombie cow. That's coming out. So, yeah, and, you know, speaking of that, before we sign off here, I mean, any more Jurassic Park talk, gentlemen? It means the world to all of us. And if you haven't seen Jurassic Park 1 through 3, Cody Grady, pull your head out of your ass and go rent it now.
Or who rents things tomorrow. These days?
I'm going to bring my DVDs tomorrow for you, buddy. You're ridiculous.
That'd be awesome.
I would just say I'm really excited for Jurassic World. You know, I'm a junkie for all the little bits of news, but you know, it's Steven Spielberg producing. The director is Colin Trevorrow, who's only made one real feature film before, Safety Not Guaranteed, but I watched it and it was fantastic. And the cinematographer is the same guy who did Amazing Spider-Man, Pearl Harbor, Armageddon, and The Rock. There's a lot of, you know, Spielberg may not be in the director's role, but he's lined up some good casting and crew choices. So I think there's a lot of speculation out there, but And a lot of people are saying, you know, well, why are we going back to Jurassic Park? I mean, you know, you guys, and we love it, you know, but there's a lot of people going, why not Jurassic Park? And they know that the crew is, they've specifically said, we're going to give a legitimate reason to have a Jurassic Park 4 in the
story. You
know
what? So. And look at it like this too. If it completely sucks, if it's Spider-Man 3, it's going to cause a reboot within the next 5 years. Because they'll want to save the franchise because it was such a moneymaker.
I can't imagine what it'll look like with the increase in technology. I bet the everything looks even better than it did. You know?
Oh my God, could you imagine Avatar with fucking dinosaurs?
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
Oh, like I said, take all of my money. Here it is now.
For the movie snobs out there, they are shooting it in film, not in digital.
Cool. Where are they at in that process? Have they started filming?
So there's been set construction out in Hawaii going on right now. And one of the set designers was tweeting pictures from a, abandoned Six Flags amusement park in New Orleans.
Okay.
For finished sets down there. So, you remember at the, that there was a mention of a amusement park on the island at some point. It was brought up in the recent game. So I don't know if they're going to incorporate that as being, because they are going back to Isla Nublar, or the site A, the site of the first movie. But I don't know if they're going to do something like Lost World where they bring it back to the mainland, or I don't know what's going on with this amusement park setting, but that's going to be in there. So they've got set construction going on. They're looking at doing a principal shooting coming up in April here. And the release date is this thing is July 2015.
Oh, shit. 2015 is set up to be like the greatest year in movies, man. Oh, my God. I'm so fucking excited for 2015. Shit. All right. Gentlemen, just to point out here, this is a Follow Networks podcast, and Follow Networks creates media and events. For instance, an event we're doing this weekend is going to Ash Comic Show here in Indianapolis. So, we are working on a time travel comic book that if you want to be in on the ground floor of and offer ideas and collaborate with the authors and artists involved, you can do so by going to www.followthe.tv and signing up on the email list. If we use your idea and we make money, you get a cut, okay? That's what we're doing. It's a community-based creation website, and that's what we're working to do here. It's super easy. We've already made a cartoon series, Horrible Prequels. It's on our YouTube page. It's youtube.com/follownetworks. And we're looking to make more. We've got Bovine almost completed. We're making the Council of Sams. We're making Sideshow Zero. We've got all sorts of things in the work for you right now. So get on there. Join our group. Join us. Listen to the podcasts, all seven of them, because we're getting bigger there too. And help us make things. Make the stuff that you want to see. That's the big goal.
I actually watched a few of those the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff was hilarious, man.
Thank you. We were real proud of that. We got a Kickstarter done for that last year and was able to produce them for, you know, a decent amount of money. And what we're looking to do now is Bovine is completed. I actually just talked to the guys at Downtown Comics today about distributing locally.
Oh, so, I'm sure they'd be down for that.
Yeah, we're hoping to have that premiered by Indie PopCon, which is in May, I believe. Yes. So keep your eyes out for some Bovine and some other Follow Networks productions. We would love to have you help us. So get on the website and sign up on the email list. That's how you get involved. Gentlemen, thank you so much for the discussion on a movie that meant more to me than a lot of things in life. It's made me the nerd I am today because of my reading habit. Like, I don't know. There's bookshelves in the garage full of books that every year I go through and just read all of them. Because I don't want anything new. I want to read the old stuff, the good stuff, man. No. But we thank you for listening today, and we will see you all next week here at the brothel.
Bye, everybody.
Say bye, Craig.
Goodbye.
Nerd.
Yeah.